coming up on today's Compassion Radio.
I was banging on desks. I was banging on doors. I was jumping up and down and yelling and screaming, saying, somebody help me. And that was when I finally got people to at least look in my direction and say, there's something really seriously wrong. You know, it's important to realize that this is a diagnosable condition. It's not something that you just feel and it goes away. This is a condition that happens when the chemistry in your brain gets mixed up.
Hi, friends, and welcome to Compassion Radio, the daily journal of how God's people live out real faith. Sometimes that kingdom call is all about just making it through today, and the next, and the next. Now, that's not to say that the way of Christ is all drudgery, far from it. But let's face it, the Christian life is not exempt from personal struggle and trials. The good news is that no matter how big the burden we might face right now, God has an answer for it that comes right from His heart, and from His power, and from His people. In fact, it often becomes quite apparent that if not for God at work within us, things might truly be impossible. And frankly, I'd much rather deal with possible and difficult than impossible and hopeless. Today's guest knows a lot about this and has faced not only the struggle of a certain kind of persistent suffering, but even more crushing, the uncompassionate and ignorant judgmentalism from her own family. And by that, I mean the church. But it's a story of triumph, too. And we all need some good news stories these days, don't you think? On a personal note, I want to add this. If you find yourself in this story, and you are struggling with the things you hear about in this series, there are some tremendous tools, people, and ministries available to you right now, and we'll give you that information during the program. So, stick with us. Well, on this program, we have Toni Ridgeway with us today, and she's an interesting story, the kind that we need today. People that are experiencing a lot of very complicated emotions and thoughts in these days. We want to address these things on Compassion Radio from a compassionate viewpoint, of course, but not just any compassion, a God compassion. Toni, welcome to Compassion Radio today.
Thank you so much for asking me.
Front lines of faith for us at this point are very much here at home. So that's why I'm calling you. If you don't mind me digging into you a little bit, just to ask about your personal history, get some details from you, if that'd be okay with you?
Yes, of course. Well, I have lived in San Diego all my life and officially became a part of the Christian church when I was about 30. My family was Catholic. I knew God. I just didn't know I was supposed to have a relationship with Him. And then when my first son was born, when I was 24, I found out that, yeah, that was something that I needed to get involved in. And since then, I now work in Christian publishing. I'm an editor for several Christian publishing outlets. I worked at Outreach and was the managing editor for churchleaders.com and for sermoncentral.com for several years.
Okay.
The story begins in terms of my mental health. When I was 8 years old, I think I had my first what they call episode. And in 1978, there wasn't much they were interested in doing in young people with mental health issues. The episode itself turned out to be major depressive disorder, which is a little bit different than just saying you're depressed. I just happened to have a very severe case. Generally, when they talk about depression, they talk about being sad or turning anger inward and things like that. When it's at this level of severity, what happens is God made your body with a fail-safe measure that says when you start feeling that bad, your feelings turn off.
Toni, about what age was this happening?
This started when I was 8 years old. It was the first time I started noticing things like that. As I started getting older, starting getting to be 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, the feelings started to really turn off because they were very, very painful to feel. And you look around at your friends at 16, and you wonder why everything is so easy for them, why making friends is easy, why doing very well in school is easy, why, you know, those sorts of things, especially emotional things. They can laugh very easily. They enjoy things easily. And one of the things that's very indicative of a severe depressive disorder is a condition called anhedonia, which basically means you don't enjoy anything. The things that, you know, used to be enjoyable are no longer enjoyable. And that's what I was experiencing, was that why isn't this fun? Why am I working so hard? You know, why is it so hard for me to feel the things that seem so easy for everyone else to feel? I mean, it was to the point where I couldn't cry. It was difficult to laugh. Nothing was fun. And when you realize, you know, that nobody's going to help you, not that I could really put a name to it at 16, because teenagers, they don't talk to teens about mental health in the 1980s.
Yeah. It's a bit different, I think, in people's expectations nowadays, but the same problem remains in that we don't have the right vocabulary. And, you know, speaking from a biblical centeredness, like you and I have both experienced in our lives now, the idea that the word comes alive, one of the first things you learn about the creative power of God is that when he turns over responsibility or authority to man, the very first job he gave man was to name things and to create language. Mm. And God has a love language, but he also has a way for humans to communicate with each other, which requires invention. You work in that field, of course, because you're an editor. You find a way to get to the heart meaning of the words that people are trying to express and put into printed form so that others can benefit from that knowledge.
Yeah.
So that's your heart. I mean, it's your heartbeat as a career, as probably as a person. You want to communicate well. You want to help others do the same.
Yeah.
But the ability to put words to something and give it shape so that others can at least have a common understanding of what you're trying to describe is a powerful thing. And you're saying that it was not happening in the 70s.
No, in the 70s. Well, we started to. I think later, as I got into my 30s and 40s, I think I finally started to find people, because at that point, I was banging on desks. I was banging on doors. I was jumping up and down and yelling and screaming, saying, somebody help me.
Hmm.
And that was when I finally got people to at least look in my direction and say, there's something really seriously wrong. This isn't just your common run-of-the-mill situation where you say, you know, I'm depressed that my pizza place closed,
mm-hmm.
or I'm depressed because I failed a test, or I lost a football game, or something like that, which is in our common vernacular.
Right.
In fact, some of our worship songs talk about depression and how it must cease, which I believe the word is oppression, not depression in scripture.
Yeah.
But
there are distinctions between the two, but they often get conflated.
Yes. You know, it's important to realize that this is a diagnosable condition.
Mm.
It's not something that you just feel and it goes away. This is a condition that happens when the chemistry in your brain gets mixed up.
And it's also something that you talk about definition. It was diagnosed not just by modern science. A lot of scripture is in response to the lack of the man in responding to truth or the ability to do so. If God says, you have all these things, but we don't feel it, we don't believe it, all those things become arguments with God himself. And the scripture gives room for us to lament not just the things that have happened to us, but our inability to process it,
which
I think is marvelous. And the Psalms, of course, are chock full of this bipolar guy that was king of Israel.
Yes, I've heard that story.
So you tell me then about what it was for you that enabled you to finally say, there's hope for my condition.
When you go to the church, you talk a lot about how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
You talk a lot about the spiritual experience is a feeling. Worship is a feeling. No, I didn't feel God today, so I feel like, you know, the worship service didn't go well.
Yeah.
Something like that. So what I had to realize is that scripture is true whether I feel it or not.
Yeah.
God is present. God is in your life. God is working whether you feel it or not. So scripture became a medicinal source of truth for me, because it was the logical part of my brain that worked well.
Mm-hmm.
The emotional part of my brain didn't work all that well and wasn't interpreting the feelings that other people had. So what I would do is read scripture, which would say, the truth of God is the truth of God, whether you feel it, believe it, or not.
And then you choose to believe it.
And then I was able to say, that's something that I can get my hands on, that God is present whether I feel him or not, that his truth is true, that is, you know, whatever you feel, it is there for you. That was the moment that I realized what I've heard in the church about people who suffer from mental illness, the criticism I received, they would say things like, you need to pray more, read more.
All the doing things.
Yes, all of those things that you do in order to feel better, and that you had sin that you just weren't confessing. I even had an elder in a church call me because I wrote an article about being mentally ill in the church and how the church deals with mental illness. He called me up and told me that I wasn't a Christian because mental illness is something that Christians don't experience.
That Christians are not exempt from much of the suffering in this world should be a no-brainer. But there's a lot of misguided theology out there that amounts to victim blaming, as if willpower alone is the solution to everything. It's a false gospel at best, and it denies reality and makes no room for true grace or God's power. Please don't get stuck there and let pride keep you from reaching out for the help that you need, Christ-centered and compassionate help. If you or someone you know is struggling with the kind of mental or spiritual struggles that are stealing joy, hope, and the will to live, our friends at DeathToLife.com have real solutions and hope for you. If you're young or old, the same struggles with isolation, purpose, and meaning can rapidly steal our hope, especially in times like we find ourselves in right now. If you're struggling, the bravest thing you might ever do is to open your browser to DeathToLife.com. That's death, the number two, life.com. I can't recommend these caring and competent people enough. And thanks to you, friends, for the way you stand with Compassion Radio to make this program possible each day, as we get the word out on these vitally needed ministries and inspiring stories to go with them. Your prayers and financial support are absolutely essential. Without you, there is no Compassion Radio. Call us today at 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. You can write us at P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Again, that's Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Or log on to CompassionRadio.com right now to make your gift and learn more about what we do. You'll also find links to each of our daily broadcasts and subscription links to all of our daily podcast releases on every major platform. It's all there for you at CompassionRadio.com. Check it out today. And now, back to my discussion with Tony Ridgeway.
Now, I want to take a break here and just remind our listeners that when we talk about mental health or mental illness, you know, these are words that we give labels to certain sections of our being. It's not like it's a hard fact or a hard object within our lives. It's something that describes a part of ourselves. So some people may talk in emotional language about the feelings they have. Others might talk about what they believe. Others might talk about the things that they are having dissonance about or not sure they can accept. All those things really go down to a heart belief, as the Bible describes it. And the things that we really believe are indicated by our emotions. So the things that we believe really truly do affect the way we feel, the way we act, and the reality we choose to live in. And we can see that even in the world around us in the past couple of years, when people buy into some serious conspiracy theories that change your worldview into something that is counter to reality. It has massive consequences on our culture, our society, our safety, and on people's mental health, because what you believe matters. It's not to say that you just change your mind and suddenly feel better. The thing you're talking about is allowing, I think, God to speak into you in a way that you're willing to accept that what he says is true and therefore change your mind. And when you decided, Tony, to accept that God says, my truth is truth, whether you feel it or not, is a decision you make. It's rational, but it's also a deeply emotional one. You choose to trust that God says this and that God is not out to get me. And therefore, I need to travel toward him and his way of thinking, not the other way around. Even though he will come to rescue me, I still have to make this journey back to where he is.
Yeah.
And therefore, you have kind of a noble pursuit to make. So tell me about how that road began for you.
Well, that began basically when I realized that moment, as we were talking about that God's truth is true. Really, I had to have a conversation with God about this. Mm-hmm. Which was, you know, for as long as I've been a Christian, I have done everything that you've asked me to do. I do the disciplines. I go to church. I'm a minister. I am a leader. I work with kids. I have worked in every area of ministry there is. Why is this happening to me?
Hmm.
And why is it not being fixed? And why do I have to experience this? And at the end of that conversation, I had the audacity to say, God, why are you doing this to me?
Mm-hmm. Many people have said that very thing and felt guilty for saying it.
Yes, and I have to admit that it was not probably my best moment in the world as a Christian.
Why not? I'm going to stop you right there, Joni. Tell me why you think that asking God an honest, emotional, heartfelt question, even if it seems impetuous, why would you think that is wrong?
Well, I think not asking the question was wrong. I think when I got the answer, I realized it. Because when I got the answer that I felt in my being, which again, we're talking about feelings and beliefs,
right?
The answer that it came to me and that came to me really over time was God didn't do this to me. He's actually protecting me from it. This is something that happens in the world.
Yeah.
Because the world is imperfect and because our bodies are imperfect. Because, you know, things go wrong. I mean, my family, generations back, has dealt with various mood disorders, such as anxiety and depression and all kinds. The women in my family go back. It's sort of a generational issue.
So there's some genetic basis for some of this that you've discovered along the way by studying your own history. That discovery is important, that disclosure. Without being impertinent too much here, can I also ask if there are any things about roots of abuse or other traumas that may be playing into it as well?
There is indeed, and it really comes from generations of female leaders in my family, the parents and the grandparents. They're all dealing with this issue on their own, and again, trying to raise children.
Yeah.
So if you're dealing with a mental illness and you're trying to raise a child, you're going to have issues in parenting that cause that child to not only inherit the genetic part of the mental illness, but also the behavioral issue part, which is, as a parent, you don't have a lot of energy, you don't have a lot of fun in life, you know, you don't feel things properly, and so that's going to transfer to your parenting skills.
Yeah.
So that becomes, in some cases, and in mine, could be an abusive situation, could turn into a traumatic situation. I also have a diagnosis of what's called complex PTSD. PTSD, people consider some people come back from military installments and have seen horrible things or have had horrible car accidents that they can't stop thinking about. Or there's all kinds of traumas in the world. Complex PTSD happens over time. And it's continual, the same types of trauma being issued and issued and issued until suddenly you find yourself believing that the trauma is your lot in life.
Yeah. It's kind of like the emotional corollary to death by a thousand nicks.
Yes.
You are bleeding and you don't stop bleeding, but you don't realize that the next bleed is bad and is making things worse. It just is what it is.
Right. In clinical situations, it's called learned helplessness.
Okay.
It's a poor term, in my opinion. But what it means is that you have decided that your life isn't going to get any better. So you've now adjusted your life for that. You've sort of made space for that.
And there, but for God, you would remain, because that would be the reality.
Yes.
Unless something upsets that or changes it or gives you a way out.
Yes.
So let's go back to the path now. You're discovering these things about yourself in your teens, and you're screaming for help.
Yes.
You know, a cry for help implies in itself that there's a hope that there's somebody that can help and that somebody will somehow if I just call out loud enough.
Yeah.
So for me, anytime I hear a thrashing going on or somebody's having a real difficulty or screaming loudly, emotionally or literally, I think to myself, there's hope in that. I mean, that may seem kind of counterintuitive, but I have seen this in people, those who don't call out for help, that stay within learned helplessness and just suck it up and keep sponging it because they assume that God can't reach their pain, but they still want to be good church-going Christians, are the ones that lose it all, it seems.
Yes, they're the ones that are really, really in trouble. They're really, really hurting, and hurting so much that they feel as though the pain prevents them from actually speaking of it.
And you found yourself in that place for a while. So again, I'm sorry to keep rabbit trailing on you here, but back to the path. You're discovering these things along the way. Were you stuck in that pattern? And if so, when did it begin to change?
Yes, I was. I considered it to be something that I was going to have to live with. In fact, it gets so much that you get caught inside your own head where you can't see yourself from the outside.
Yeah.
What's really changed things was actually my husband said something to me one day who I've known since I was 16 years old. So he has seen this entire journey and has been on it with me almost from day one. He turned to me one day and said, "You have to understand that other people don't struggle with this like you do." And I said, "Really? Really?" And he said, "No, they don't."
That could backfire on you too, because they could come at you and say, "Well, you're the only one." Obviously, that was not your husband's intent.
No, it wasn't. And I knew him well enough to know that. He said, "I want you to understand that you and I need to find a solution to this, because what you're seeing is not what I see."
Yeah.
"What I see is someone really suffering. What you see is someone who just has to live with this, who just has to suck it up and has no help." He said, "I do not agree, and we will find help."
Hmm.
And he did. That's when the journey began. After, let's see, about 25 physicians.
25 physicians in a row. Wow.
Well, that's probably a low shot. It's actually probably closer to 40. But 25 physicians we went after to help. They referred me to other physicians, and that's really where I found some of the finest clinicians in the county, some that specialize in women with psychiatric issues, one that specializes in a very new treatment of depression called TMS.
Mm-hmm.
Also known as transcranial magnetic stimulation.
Right.
Another clinician who specializes in treatment of trauma. Another physician, Christian, very experienced, spoke with her at length about what it's like to live with this. There are outpatient programs in San Diego, which are absolutely the best I've ever seen, and I've seen a lot, which explain to me how to look outside and look in and say, "Wow, look at what your brain is doing right now," instead of, "Oh, I feel like I want to curl up in bed and die."
Yeah, they can actually look at the brain and see what it's doing.
Yes, you have to look outside yourself into the behavior is doing and say, "Wow, something is really wrong. I need to stop trying to stop the feeling and start to do damage control."
Yeah.
And stop trying to figure out why I feel the way I do.
Trying to teach a small child to not grab a hot thing. You learn from the trauma of having burned your fingers not to touch that thing again. But if that hot thing you're grabbing is you, the mind inside your skull, and you can't stop grabbing it, you're going to keep getting yourself burned, but just keep being perpetually traumatic.
Yes.
But you are talking about something that's physical. The brain itself, I learned, was a muscle, and that actually has to be exercised because it's made of the same stuff as you, the rest of you. And I also learned that there is a juncture between this physical thing called my brain and the real me, the eternal me, which I do, in fact, believe, like you do, is eternal. It's going to go beyond this body. So between those two things, there's the real me, and for all intents and purposes now, my experience has to be channeled through this instrument, this temple I call my body, which includes my brain and my heart and all my organs and my hormones and everything else about me.
Yes, yes, indeed.
But we say with hope and with faith that it's not the only thing, but it is the important thing now for understanding how we're going to live in this world, so we better take good care of it, especially when it's broken down. Now, Tony, you mentioned a couple of times earlier on about the kind of counsel you were getting, or the criticism, rather, from religious sources. There are plenty of Christians who would say, you know, don't ever go to a secular counselor because they'll just lead you into all kinds of foreign or anti-Christ thinking. There are others who would be even more legalistic, say, don't even go to a counselor because you don't have enough faith. That's your own fault. You shouldn't have to go to anybody to buck you up for your faith anyway. It's all from God directly. So if you can't just solve it through your own prayer life, then tough. I mean, there are people that are that cruel.
Yes.
And then there are others that say, whatever it takes to get you feeling better, do it. And of course, you and I both know that that doesn't cut the mustard either, because that doesn't acknowledge that there's actually truth out there, that God himself, as a person, wants to get in with you and deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
But God, as the senior counselor here, if we let him in, starts directing us in ways that are surprising. He puts us in the care of people or in friendships with those who we never would have suspected could be helpful to us or could be God's hands in our life.
Yes, that's been my experience.
And that's the end of our first segment with Tony Ridgeway. Tony, we got a lot more to talk about, so I'm looking forward to our next segment. Thanks again so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
The more you dig, the more powerful the stories become, and that's certainly the situation here. I hope you'll tune in for the rest of this powerful interview with Tony Ridgeway in the days ahead. A quick reminder out there that our friends at deathtolife.com are there to help you or someone you know that might struggle with the things that Tony's been talking about on today's program. Don't hesitate to visit them today to learn more about how you can find real hope in real life right now. The address again is deathtolife.com. That's death, the number two, life.com. There is so much to be thankful for, even in hard times. Right now, I'm very thankful for you. Your gift of time each day is a genuine treasure to us. Knowing that you're being challenged to live out your faith like never before is a wonderful encouragement to us as well. I hope you'll take time today to drop us a note through our website or by email. You can reach me directly at the following address, bramfloria@compassionradio.com. However you reach out, know that we're in this ministry and this work for you and because of you. Just call or write us today to help keep us on the air and in the field. 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And jump in anytime at CompassionRadio.com. We're waiting for you, friends. Hop on board.